Well, perfect. Well, thank you so much for the introduction. I see a few familiar faces in the crowd. If this is queued up, is this perfect? I can't stand in one spot when I present, so I'll be moving around here and try not to get in your way of the slides here. So the Pipeline Authority, it is a state government agency in North Dakota. North Dakota is one of two states that has a pipeline authority that functions in the same way as North Dakota. So I come to you today not as a regulator, not as a policymaker, but as a state agency that's been tasked with developing and facilitating new pipeline development in North Dakota. So I know the topic of this conversation is what types of obstacles, challenges are in front of the pipeline industry going forward. So I'm not going to come at it as a policy or a legal analysis. I'm going to come at it from the challenges that I've been asked to work on with the pipeline companies as they develop new projects, which is trying to stay ahead of production. We've had a tremendous challenge in North Dakota as this production has ramped up over the last 10 years and keeping up with appropriate infrastructure to address the challenges that you're seeing with natural gas capture, crude oil movements, trucking, all the different things out in the field itself. So I'm going to come at it from that angle. And as a geological engineer, you know, most pipeline companies, they have an extensive staff of mechanical engineers, civil engineers. They understand pipeline design, construction. What they don't have a good knowledge on is what's happening below the surface as far as a reservoir is concerned and what type of production to expect. What can their engineers be designing and working on that will be appropriate 5 years from now, 10 years from now, down the road? And so that's the angle that I come at this from. So obviously the Williston Basin, if you took a cut straight across from Beach, North Dakota to Fargo, this is what the earth would look like. We've got the Williston Basin located out in the western portion of the state. Deep down, about 10,000 feet down, you'll notice two very thin formations. About 370 million years ago, Mother Earth was putting together all the key pieces to create one of the world's most robust oil fields and resources, and that is in the Bakken and Three Forks. Very thin formations relative to other strata within that column. The Bakken formation that you're familiar with is about 100 feet thick in most areas. And then you've got the Three Forks formation, which is also very important below it, which is about 200 to 250 feet thick. And so the Bakken is the name that most folks associate with this development. But I want to talk a little bit here in a few moments about the Three Forks as well, that sometimes gets lumped in with the Bakken. Sometimes it gets forgotten altogether. But in the coming decades, I think the Three Forks is going to become a much more popular target for development, and we're going to continue to see a lot more success and development in that Three Forks as well. When we look at the geology, again, the Middle Bakken is the Bakken formation as a whole looks like that Oreo cookie on the top. You've got the dark, rich black shales on the top and bottom of this Bakken formation, and then the white part of the middle. The white, the sandstones, limestones, is where the oil industry is targeting with their wellbores. So they drill down 2 miles and horizontally 2 miles, targeting that lighter colored portion of that rock formation. Directly underneath it is the Three Forks formation. And if you can imagine for a second, these dark, rich, black shales, that's where the oil originated. The high organic content gives it that dark black color. And throughout the millions of years of heat and pressure, the oil migrated out of these black shales into the Middle Bakken, as well as pressure forcing some of that crude oil out of the lower shale down into the Three Forks. And so you have oil trapped within microscopic pores within those two formations that the industry is trying to unlock and develop. So what's the industry doing today? This is a snapshot of where the drilling rigs were located as of yesterday, 63 drilling rigs in North Dakota. And you'll notice geographically, they're all very tightly spaced in one area in western North Dakota. And so the question becomes, you know, why? Is it just a coincidence? You know, do they like being that close to each other? Why are they spaced the way that they are? And it has to do with the geology down in the subsurface. How well the industry expects the rock to produce, what type of results they can expect. The other interesting fact about these drilling rigs, some folks use this drilling rig count as kind of a metric. You know, how active is North Dakota's oil industry? So they'd say, okay, we've got 63 drilling rigs today. Well, I remember 5-10 years ago we had 180 drilling rigs. You know, how does this compare? Are we that much lower in activity? The answer is a little bit misleading. If you just focus on this green line for a second, that is the drilling rig efficiency in North Dakota. And it's measured by how many wells they can drill in a given month. And so a drilling rig today, this drilling rig fleet of 63, is roughly the equivalent of about 120, 130 drilling rigs of just 5 years ago. The efficiency, how quickly they can drill down horizontally, vertically, has increased substantially. So 63 drilling rigs, much more efficient, much more active than maybe that number would initially look. And so again, to answer that question, why are they so focused where they're at? This map that you're looking at is one I've put together of break-even prices for the Bakken Three Forks development in North Dakota. So I get asked the question quite frequently, you know, what oil price does it take for the industry to be active or inactive in North Dakota? If oil hits $50, if oil hits $70, what happens? Do the rigs go away? Do they come back? To answer that question, there is no one size fits all. The geology in the subsurface drives the economics. You know, notice these darkest, richest red portions of this play in North Dakota. You'll notice on the scale, they have very low break-even prices, which means they produce a lot of oil and they can stay active in those areas at lower price points. The yellows and the darker greens require a higher price point. And so, again, if you remember back to that rig map, they're all focused right now on some of their best acreage. So if an operator has acreage positions to drill in that red area, they will, and that's where they're going to position their rigs. That same operator may have acreage in the greens and the yellows, but they're not putting their rig there today because, again, they're going after their most abundant targets first. And as prices increase throughout time, as technology improves, we expect these rigs to continue to move outward almost in a circular fashion from the core into these outward plays or outward fields as they develop the resource in those areas. So it will get developed, but generally it does take a higher price in order to target and go after those fringe areas of the play. Another key question I get asked a lot is, how long is this thing going to last? For the pipeline companies that I work with, it's very concerning to them. They put pipe in the ground. It's not like building a storefront that if things go south, they can repurpose it for a different store, sell it. Once pipe is in the ground, that's a sunk cost. It's a sunk asset. So they're very concerned about what does this play look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 30, 40 years from now. And so last year, I took on a pretty big project trying to quantify how many drilling locations were left in North Dakota, how much play, how much life did this play still have in it, given what we know today. And again, these are just some summaries, slides. I've got the full slide deck on my website. But in summary, the biggest unknown is on that Three Forks formation. Remember how I said, you know, I believe, honestly, personally, the further I dig into the Three Forks, that in the coming decades, that will become more and more a target in North Dakota. So this low case scenario and this high case scenario assumes very little activity in the Three Forks. The high case assumes that that formation below the Bakken will get developed fairly extensively. So when we look out, and we look at, okay, the higher performing wells to the lower performing wells. Today it takes about a 500 barrel per day well to be economic. And so with what we know today, we have between 21,000 and 60,000 additional wells to be drilled in a category that I would say is considered economic today. If oil prices were to go up to $80, $90, you know, then a 300 barrel a day well would work, and we still have about 30 to 85,000 additional wells to be drilled within the place. So again, it's price driven, it's geology driven, and it's going to also be very dependent upon what the industry decides to do with that lower Three Forks formation. Again, the well results so far have been very positive. Some things are looking very promising for the Three Forks. So I think, you know, the answer is probably somewhere in the middle, but I think it's going to be probably closer to this lower scenario than it would be to the top. And then in terms of years, you know, well count may not mean a lot to you if you're not familiar with the industry. Again, at today's price, we'll just use $61. At the pace they're drilling today, between 20 and 60 years of today's pace of activity, just to get all the wells drilled in the play. That does not include the additional 30 to 40 years of production from that well. Does not include any type of additional work on enhanced oil recovery. So the moral of the story is that we've got a tremendous amount of just pure development phase, we've got a production phase, and then you've got the extended enhanced oil production, and then the reclamation phase. So this activity in North Dakota is going to continue far through my career, children's careers, and likely far beyond that as this continues to mature and work its way through the process. So where are we at today? Roughly 1.4 million barrels per day. Again, you can see this rapid ramp up, the price collapse that occurred late 2014, and then the recovery in production going forward. So what are the expectations? During this price crash, I read and spoke with many different analysts that thought, you know, this was the beginning of the end of North Dakota's oil boom, that we're going to be declining out, the industry would never come back, and that hasn't been the case. So in my world, 1.4 million barrels per day, what happens with that? If we look at the U.S. and North America, we've got quite an extensive network of major trunk, the transmission lines that handle the crude oil from North Dakota and other producing areas of the North America. And you'll notice in a moment a couple key things. First, North Dakota is very well connected to the Great Lakes area. There's a few different pipeline options to get down to these refineries. There is connectivity down to the Cushing, Oklahoma, and to the Gulf Coast now. There is zero pipeline connectivity to the West Coast, zero pipeline connectivity to the refineries on the East Coast. And so you're going to see a mix out of North Dakota of pipeline transportation and rail transportation. And the most recent figures were from January. About three-fourths of North Dakota's oil was leaving the state by pipeline. The remainder was either moving out by rail car or being refined locally within the state. And so for anyone that's been in North Dakota for a number of years and has followed this industry, you know that the pipe rail conversation has been one that has been at the forefront of a lot of different topics of conversation. And it has been evolving quite dynamically. This is just a historical view at market share. Pipeline is in blue. Rail market share is in purple. And you saw this massive flip-flop where rail became the dominant mode of transportation back in 2012, 2013. A few things were going on. North Dakota's oil production was ramping up very quickly. There was a very strong market incentive. The refineries on the east and west coasts had a very strong price incentive. That's shown in this blue dotted line, where they could far exceed the additional cost of rail in the pricing structure. You know, again, a $20 bonus to get that oil to the East Coast, and let's say it cost you an extra $4 or $5 to get it there, well, you just made a $15 profit on that transaction versus going on a pipeline. So we saw rail take over as the dominant mode of transportation. And then as we saw additional pipeline projects come into play, Dakota Access coming into service, and as well, that market incentive had decreased substantially. And we saw now back in a scenario of pipelines being the dominant mode of transportation out of the region. You know, people again ask me, what does this look like going forward? I can't predict the market. We do have some predictions as far as where production's going. But again, the market does play a very key driver in those decisions of whether or not a barrel leaves North Dakota on a pipeline or whether it gets onto a rail car. On just a pure volume basis, the highest crude by rail volumes were back again in that 2014 timeframe, about 800,000 barrels per day. Leaving by rail car, now it's around that 275, 300,000 barrels per day leaving North Dakota by rail car. Again, this is just a snapshot of the major market prices. These black barrels that you see, these are refineries around the U.S. So again, you've got the Marathon Petroleum just across the river here. Very small relative to some of these other major hubs. As we go forward, the Gulf Coast is going to continue to be a primary target for North Dakota crude oil. Again, not only is it the North America's largest refining center, there are also export options down in that marketplace. These other markets are very well saturated with crude, so any growth, incremental growth out of North Dakota and other plays will likely be heading down to the Gulf Coast, either consume there, offsetting imports, or getting on a tanker ship and moving to the export side. And so where does this thing go from here? So we're at 1.4 million barrels per day. The magic question that I work with on a daily basis is, where is this play going? One interesting trend that we've seen is every single year, this is just average North Dakota well performance. And so the topic of the conversation today was challenges for the pipeline industry. It's been keeping up with production. The midstream folks that build these pipelines, build the processing facilities, the gas capture infrastructure, been very, very challenging for them to be able to keep up with technology and stay ahead of the curve because of all the technology advancements on the producing side of the community. So year by year, we've continued to see well performance improve. 2017 to 2018, another 12% improvement in the way the wells perform. So if you can imagine yourself as an engineer, in 2015, you're designing a project to go into service in 2017 or 2018 because of the time frame in permitting, construction, everything else. You thought you were building this infrastructure with the best known technologies, the best everything built into it. All of a sudden, that system goes into service finally 2017, 2018, and the wells are performing 20, 30% higher than what your engineering team had anticipated. And that's been, again, the root of the challenge for infrastructure development from my viewpoint is, again, keeping up with the producing community. Again, it's a good challenge to have for those folks. Their customers are producing more product. But from a regulatory standpoint and other environmental concerns, it is very challenging. This will be the point that I would put up a slide from the movie Jaws. If you remember the sheriff, when he first sees the shark off the back, he's chumming off the back of the fishing boat, and he looks up and he has that shocked look on his face, and he goes and talks to the old fisherman there and says, you know, the famous line, "You're going to need a bigger boat." This has been a very concerning graphic for us in the midstream industry. What you're looking at are initial production rates. And if you're not familiar with the industry, what that means, when a well gets drilled and they hydraulically fracture the well, there's this initial 24-hour production test. They finally turn the well on and they measure the production for 24 hours, and it tells a bit of the tale of what to expect potentially from that well going forward. It doesn't tell the whole story, but it helps understand. You'll notice that for many years, oil production rates in that 24-hour test were fairly static. Things, you know, were very marginally improving. Over the life of the well, they were improving production techniques, pumping techniques, but IP rates have been fairly static. Well, the second half of 2018, we've seen a massive, massive jump in these 24-hour production rates, 50 to 60% improvement, which is massive. This is something that has the processing companies, the pipeline companies, it has everyone's full attention right now saying, okay, what does this mean? Have we, has technology taken another leap forward? What does this mean for our infrastructure? What do we need going forward? When we look at both oil and gas, again, on the gas side, from a gas capture, gas processing, all that infrastructure that's necessary, this, again, has everyone's attention, both the Middle Bakken and the Three Forks together. It's not just happening in the Middle Bakken. It's happening in the Three Forks as well. Makes us concerned that our forecasts and our expectations and designs and everything else that was being put into place to address challenges in 2019, you know, will it be enough is the big question. Just again, another graphic here. These are just some samples of 24-hour production rates, some cases hitting over 8,000 barrels per day, 9,000 barrels per day wells, which again is unheard of for North Dakota. So again, very, it's got our attention, we'll put it that way. And so where do we see things going forward? This is with today's technology, the current oil price forecast from the Department of Energy at the federal level. This is my forecast for where oil production may be headed in the coming years. I have two scenarios, my case one and my case two. Case one is my expected. It assumes that if the DOE was 100% correct on their price forecasts and every industry participant acted in the way we thought they were to act at a given price point, this is where we'd see production going, north of 2 million barrels per day. Case two is a more conservative look. It assumes the same price outlook, but it assumes that the industry pulls back the reins in North Dakota, whether it's because they're putting investment and capital in other plays around the U.S. and Texas. Maybe there's regulatory issues they're facing. So case two is just a conservative look at the industry activity. So again, still some growth long term. In the near term, a lot more uncertainty. And so what does this mean? We know the resource on the ground. There was a resource assessment update by Continental Resources late last year. They were anticipating that with today's technology, 30 to 40 billion barrels would be recovered out of the Bakken. And so this is a good spot check for me as a forecaster to say, okay, I'm predicting 2 million barrels per day. Is that reasonable with the resource development that some of the operators are saying. Again, my case one scenario, at least in this forecast period, still does not get up to that resource assessment level, which, you know, maybe it would in the further out years. So I think it's reasonable, whether it's conservative or reasonable. That's up for debate, but I don't think it's unreasonable. Again, pipeline development in North Dakota, we've got three major directions that oil moves out of the region. The Enbridge pipeline system, which moves oil east towards the Great Lakes and down to the Cushing, Oklahoma market. You've got the Dakota Access system, shown in teal, which goes directly down to the Gulf Coast. And then you've got a series of pipelines out in eastern Montana that take Williston Basin oil and move it down into the Guernsey, Wyoming, Cushing, Oklahoma markets. And so going forward, if this was our oil production, we have the amount of pipeline and refining capacity shown in green today. A couple projects in the works, the Liberty Pipeline System by True Oil and Phillips 66, as well as the Davis Refinery out near Belfield, are shown in yellow. And then this gray chunk is rail loading capacity within North Dakota. So again, we don't anticipate oil being stranded in North Dakota under these production profiles, but we will be exceeding, again, pipeline and refining capacity in the coming years. So again, what does that mean? Again, crude by rail will be a part of the transportation mix. The volume, you kind of have a sense of what a minimum volume might be. It could be higher than that if there's market incentive to do so. So again, going forward, what we're working on is taking a look at, okay, what opportunities are there for new projects, expansions of projects, in order to get additional pipeline refining capacity into this area under the red curve. On the natural gas side of the world, natural gas, again, I heard just some bits and pieces of the previous speaker talking about gas capture and the importance of that topic. This is something, again, I work with on a daily basis. I try and break it down into four kind of understandable chunks of what it takes in order to get this gas captured and moved to market. The first is understanding production. You saw some of my discussion on the oil side earlier. Natural gas as well. I've got a pretty robust production forecast for natural gas development in North Dakota. This curve in both scenarios grows at a much faster rate than the oil forecast. The way the reservoir works, over time, more gas relative to oil gets produced as these wells age, and we see a more rapid growth rate in natural gas production. So, very important when you're putting together new projects, trying to develop processing facilities and infrastructure to capture it. First phase, once that well starts producing the natural gas, is you have to get into the gathering phase. Again, I heard a comment by the earlier speaker that most of the flaring in North Dakota comes from connected wells. That's 100% correct. You'll notice of the gas that is flared, a large portion that you see in orange there is gas that is connected to a pipeline. It's just simply that pipeline system cannot handle all the gas that's being produced at that well location. And so you have some gas going into the flare pit, some gas going down the sales line simultaneously. And then you have this blue portion, which is wells that don't have a pipeline connection. A pipeline connection may be coming. Maybe it's in a stranded area that a pipeline will never come to that location. But it is a much smaller piece of the pie. So the industry, again, is trying to stay very focused and targeted on this bigger piece. And how do we expand existing infrastructure to minimize the flaring from connected facilities? Gas scenarios, again, year over year, the gas performance has continued to increase. So, again, folks say, why is so much flaring happening? I think at the very, very root of it, you know, no one intends for that gas to flare as it's being developed. Again, pipeline systems, the diameters that were chosen, the flow rates, the processing capacity. Again, if it was a 2015 design build and trying to go into service in, say, 2017, 2018, well, we've got a massive, massive improvement in the well performance, and a 6-inch line or an 8-inch line, whatever it was that the engineers had designed, just simply is not large enough to handle all the production from that location. Again, as you saw earlier, same thing has been occurring over the last 6 months. The natural gas initial production rates significantly higher. That again has folks concerned about systems that are being constructed and whether or not industry we're going to be able to keep up with development here in the near term. On the processing side of the world, so once that gas is produced, it's gathered from the wellhead location, it needs to go to a processing facility. Those processing facilities take the gas, they clean it up, and make it into marketable, saleable products that we can consume, whether that's methane that gets delivered to our homes and our businesses, propanes, butanes that go into other petrochemical industries. In North Dakota, you'll notice, again, my production forecast, there's a lot of things going on here, but if you just focus right here where that red and gray line fork, that is where current natural gas production is. This peach-colored portion is current processing plant capacity. You notice white space underneath the production curve. Again, that's not a scenario that's desirable. That means that production is higher than processing capacity. It won't be until later this year that we anticipate the investments that are going into the ground today, you know, construction that's ongoing, will begin to catch up. But you'll quickly notice that that red line breaks through that chunk of investment that's going into the ground today in the not-too-distant future. So we look long-term. Again, the discussions we're having today are on this piece of the pie. This chunk, these solutions are already getting put into place. The question now is how quickly are new processing plants necessary? What size, what scale, what location are these facilities going to be necessary? So those are the key questions that are getting developed and answered today in boardrooms and around the U.S. And then transmission. This has not been a major issue for North Dakota yet. I think it's coming. It will become a major issue in the coming years. So natural gas transmission, what that means is after gas leaves the processing facility, it has to go somewhere. We produce far more natural gas than North Dakota can consume through our heating, power generation, any other uses. And so we have a major infrastructure system currently in place. Today it works very well. There are no issues with natural gas transmission. The natural gas processing facilities that you see output the methane, the dry gas. It gets put primarily into the red WBI and the blue northern border system. Gets delivered down to the mid-continent, Iowa, Chicago type markets. The question becomes, at what point in time do we start to fill up these pipeline systems, and when would we need a major new natural gas transmission line out of North Dakota? And the big key system to watch is this northern border line. It's North Dakota's biggest pipeline system. It's 42-inch. Carries, historically, it was built primarily for Canadian production. It comes down out of Alberta. And as North Dakota's production is ramped up, North Dakota gas keeps, as we continue to grow volumes, that volume continues to push itself into northern border. And so for every new molecule of North Dakota gas that gets produced, that means one more molecule of Canadian gas can't get on a northern border. And that Canadian gas is forced to find a different route out of Canada. And again, this has been working thus far. It's about a 50-50 mix, half Canadian, half North Dakota gas on this system. Question becomes, at what point in time does this become 100% North Dakota, and are we out of space on this pipeline network? And so my answer for that, with what we know today, barring any major technology shifts, which we think are very likely coming, somewhere in the next 5 years, 5 to 7 years, this could be a major issue for gas exiting the Williston Basin. So again, these discussions are taking place right now. They're taking place saying, okay, what happens if we see a 10% improvement in well performance this year? What if we see a 20% improvement? We saw the IP rates ramping up. You know, does this come even sooner than what we're showing on this graphic? So again, because of the time frames it takes to develop a major pipeline option out of the region, decisions and things are going to have to start happening very rapidly within the next year or so in order to address this challenge going forward. And then natural gas liquids, from those natural gas processing facilities, natural gas liquids, your ethane, propane, butane, these other chemical commodities need to be moved to marketplace. And when we look long term, if you just focus on this top left corner, this is my forecast for natural gas liquids out of the region. So almost 1.2 million barrels per day of natural gas liquids. That used to be a phenomenal number to even talk about for crude oil being produced in North Dakota. Now we're talking about over 1 million barrels per day of natural gas liquids that need to be handled, moved, and transported out of the region. When we look long term, again, we're short on pipe capacity today. We are railing roughly 100,000 barrels per day of natural gas liquids out of the region because of inadequate pipeline capacity. There's a major system under construction today by One Oak. That should be in service late this year. That's going to provide some relief. But again, long term, as you look at this, the notion is, with what we understand today, that either an expansion will have to happen of that system and or some additional investment in natural gas liquid exit options for the Williston Basin. And this is just a quick graphic of that Elk Creek system that's under construction today. And then last but not least, just very quickly, where is North Dakota at on pipeline construction? 2017 is the latest year we have hard data for. What you're seeing in gray, this is the miles of pipeline that's being constructed on a given year. During the most active time periods, you know, over 3,000 miles of new pipe getting put into service in 1 year's time frame. That's the distance from about Seattle to Orlando, Florida, in 1 year's time frame out in the western one-third of North Dakota. So a phenomenal pace of activity, very, very challenging for the landowners, the pipeline developers, the construction crews. So again, this was a very challenging time for all stakeholders during development. As activity slowed down with the price collapse, we saw pipeline activity retract. My expectation is that, again, going forward with ramp-ups in activity in 2018, 2019, we'll start to see these miles of installation continue to go up.